Morning, everyone, and welcome. Our first case of the morning is number 083701, Chapman Kelly versus Chicago Park District.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you for your time today. My name is Micah Marcus. I'm here representing Chapman Kelly on his appeal from the district court. My client's appeal centers around two major issues. First, whether the district court erred by finding that my client's work, Wildflower Works, was not entitled to protection under the Visual Artists' Rights Act because it was not sufficiently original as to be entitled to protection under the Copyright Act. If it pleases the court, I'll refer to the Visual Artists' Rights Act as VARA, as I find that far easier to say repeatedly. The second issue is whether the district court erred in finding that VARA itself does not protect site-specific art and therefore did not protect my client's work, Wildflower Works. I would respectfully submit to this panel that the district court erred in both cases. There is also a counter-appeal on this issue in which the City of Chicago has taken the position that the district court erred in finding that Judge Kaur found on behalf of my client for breach of contract based upon the argument that Margaret Bureau, as a commissioner of the Park District, was unable to bind the city with respect to its obligations with Mr. Kelly. But that's the basis of the case, but that's not what this case is about. Respectfully to my client and to this panel, this case extends far beyond Chapman Kelly and Wildflower Works. This case is about artists nationwide who look to the federal courts for protection of their intellectual efforts and their art that undoubtedly brings value to society at large. Rights would be placed in serious jeopardy were the district court's decision allowed to stand. Respectfully, if our society is going to be understood to value art, the federal courts have to be ready to protect that art and protect the statutes which were put in place by Congress to protect those rights. I'll first turn to the issue of the application of VARA. As I said, the district court determined that Wildflower Works was not entitled to VARA protection because it didn't satisfy the initial element of being able to be protected by the Copyright Act. The court found, and this has not been appealed, that it was a work of visual art. It is either a painting or a sculpture and would otherwise be entitled to protection but for this lack of ability to be copyrighted because it was not original. And in that particular point, the court stated as follows. Is it the elliptical design, the size, the use of native instead of non-native plants, the environmentally sustainable gardening system method to which vegetative management systems apparently refers? Kelly leaves this court to assume that he is the first person to ever conceive of and express an arrangement of growing wildflowers in an ellipse-shaped enclosed area in the manner in which he created this exhibit. Respectfully, that implies a standard of originality that is simply untenable and unenforceable in our system. The concept of original, as provided by the Supreme Court in Feist, is a minimal degree of creativity, a mere spark of intellectual labor that separates the work of art as original versus a copy. Now, under this standard, I can assure this panel, if they were to look at the Copyright Registry and they wanted to look up paintings of a woman on a canvas, I would assure you there'd be millions. If they wanted to look up painting of a fruit bowl, they want to look up sculpture of a man or a book. The mere fact that a form of art has been performed before does not mean that that type of art can never be copyrighted after. It is not
what
the form.
It just means it has to be independently created. It could be someone else could have done something else, but as long as it's original with this artist, is that enough?
That is correct. It's not a standard of novelty or new art. I mean, if that is the standard, there would be no further copyright protection in art ever. Unless we come up with a completely new, utter concept of what art is, we will no longer have copyright protection moving forward. And that just simply can't be the right standard. In response to this, the city simply has no response. They can't justify the court's position on his view of originality and instead simply says it wasn't original. Well, why not? There was a huge degree of artistic labor put into this. This was Mr. Kelly's artistic vision for over 20 years before creating Wildflower Works. He was known for creating elliptical shapes, surrounding wildflowers on paintings and other forms.
Well, the statute doesn't require a huge degree of creativity or originality. It's a very, very low threshold.
I would agree, Your Honor, and to the extent that this panel would accept that this is the minimum amount of creativity required, then I'll move on to my next subject.
The harder question is the site-specific art question.
Okay, well, moving on to the site-specific art question, I would also suggest the district court erred in that manner as well. The district court simply applied Phillips, the case of Phillips, without any type of analysis or independent thought other than the fact that Phillips decided that site-specific art would not be entitled to protection. And the Phillips case, respectfully, was wrongfully decided.
Site-specific?
Site-specific art.
Now, that's not statutory, is it?
No, that's not statutory, Your Honor. That was a definition created by the First Circuit in Phillips. And I would state also that I don't believe that the use of that definition actually even applies to this case.
But that public presentation exception is statutory, and that's pretty broad, isn't it?
I don't think it's so broad, and I think while it certainly does apply and it certainly does allow an owner of land to move property, it doesn't allow them to destroy it where it sat for 20 years. In particular, I would point that the existence of the exception actually renders clear the fact that the statute is intended to recognize site-specific art. The statute, the particular exemption you're discussing, says that in the case that an artist claims that the modification by movement or lighting of his art causes mutilation or distortion, that won't constitute the type of harm or distortion or mutilation that this act finds actionable. There is one type of artist that would offer such an argument, an artist who believes that the site in which his art lays has an impact on the overall artistic vision. So why would that exception exist if the statute wasn't otherwise meant to cover and protect site-specific art? In particular, by the mere fact that the art can be harmed in one way that other art is not susceptible to does not mean it's not entitled to all the other protections provided under the Act of VARA. For instance, the right of attribution has absolutely no relationship to this issue. Did Mr. Kelly have the right to claim that he created wildflower works to the public? Was that a right protected by VARA? I would suggest it is. Did Mr. Kelly have the right to not have his artwork defamed or destroyed or mutilated? And I would suggest he does.
Well, speaking of the defamation, what was the evidence that your client suffered some reputational loss because of the reconfiguration or different array that the wildflowers are now in?
Your Honor, I don't believe that reputational loss is a necessary element with respect to the destruction of the property, and I would suggest that there were a number of...
Well, doesn't the statute require that the modification be prejudicial to his or her honor or reputation?
Well, it's prejudicial to an honor that would destroy his entire life's work, Your Honor.
Which is it? Is it protecting his reputation, Barrett, protecting reputation, or is it protecting the work of art?
I think it's both, Your Honor. I think it's both protecting his honor and his reputation. What the city did was...
No, I'm saying make a distinction between honor and reputation and the artwork itself. I thought it was mostly to protect the reputation or the integrity of the artists.
Yes, but I believe it does that by protecting the art. I don't think you can completely separate the two. The intent is to protect artists and their rights with respect to their intellectual labor and the art that they provide that society values.
What's the measure of damages?
The measure of damages is statutory, Your Honor, and I think that issue was never arrived at the district court because he decided that VARA did not apply. But to this point, yes, he was defamed in the fact that that it was clear that the city felt that his art was not worth protecting, and they were entitled to destroy it without qualms, without any remorse. And his artwork, his lifetime's work, which he had for 20 years had brought people to and showed and demonstrated as an example of his original art form, had been destroyed. I mean, that is damage in of itself.
Does the city peg his name to this new configuration? Do they say that's his work?
No, I do not believe they do. But to that extent, they're not violating VARA in trying to attribute a mutilated piece of work to Mr. Kelly. But Mr. Kelly should have his piece of work, his piece of art, still intact. He should have that right for that art to be available.
So a city makes a big mistake when it accepts this type of art, doesn't it? Because it's then locked into that particular configuration, that particular array, and can never modify its park.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Once it does that.
I disagree. I'm not saying the public use exception doesn't apply. What I'm saying is that Phillips erroneously understood the impact of the public use exception.
The public could have moved this, right?
They could have moved this. And Mr. Kelly, well, the city will come up and say, well, Mr. Kelly objected to the movement. He objected to movement to specific locations. He didn't object to movement completely. In fact, there were other locations that he was considering that he thought would have been better locations for this to be moved. They were not tied into maintaining Wildflower Works the rest of his life by allowing him to place Wildflower Works in Daly Bicentennial Plaza. That's simply not the case. And the Act specifically covers for that. The Act says, in these cases of site-specific art, I'm not going to allow you artists to argue that you have adverse possession over a piece of land because you put a piece of art there. And it takes into account its surroundings.
So he can move, you're saying he can move the piece of art. Did you put this in one category, painting, drawing, print, or sculpture? Is this a sculpture?
Your Honor, it's a matter of final decision of fact by the district court that this could be considered either a painting or a sculpture. That issue has not been appealed.
All right. Well, that's because I didn't have to start with that. But then it comes the, I guess, the movability of it. They claim, of course, that it had weeds and all kinds of other things wrong with it. I don't know how well it was maintained over those years. Okay. I can understand putting it somewhere else, but is there any practical way to move that flower by flower?
Well, you don't have to move it flower by flower. In fact, the only testimony that came in the trial court is actually they have the ability to come in with giant scrapers, cut up the entire piece of land, roll it up, and carry it over to another location. In fact, there was testimony that a specific collector had brought in an entire meadow from France for his private collection by that very way. So, I mean, this is not something that moving it was not impossible. Moving it did not require destruction. And simply destroying it where it sat is not an appropriate act under VARA. While they're allowed to move it, that is one thing. In particular, you know, if I could just focus the court on the erroneous analysis of Phillips. I mean, what Phillips took the position was is that because one type of harm is allowed, you're not entitled to any other protection. And there's no logical leap there. There's no rational extension. The very purpose of the Act is to protect art, to protect artists of well-known stature and recognized works, to protect them. Then you have a minimal exception that says you can move art, and that can't be actionable. To then extend that to say, well, the Act could not have ever intended to give them any other form of protection, I just suggest is not reasonable. Not an appropriate extension. If I could turn a little bit to the issue then of damages. The district court, though, finding on behalf of my client with respect to breach of contract with the city for their destruction of his lifetime's work, found in the end that they could not determine the appropriate damages in this case because Mr. Kelly failed to present evidence of the damages in which he failed to mitigate. I would suggest that gets the law of Illinois backwards. The court found that the only testimony, reliable testimony, was that the value of the flowers in Wildflower Works had an approximate value of $1.5 million. He also found that at least 55% of those wildflowers had been destroyed. That leaves to a very simple calculation of $825,000. Now, the court takes issue with the fact that my client didn't say how much it would have cost him to move those other flowers. Well, that's not his burden. That's the burden of the defendant who is claiming that they failed to mitigate our damages by removing flowers before the city could destroy them.
There's kind of a threshold question here, though, about what the terms of this implied contract are?
Yes, and I understand that, and I was waiting for rebuttal to discuss those, but I'm happy to discuss those now. With respect to the terms of an implied contract, promissory expression, which was relied upon by the district court, states that promissory expression is inferred from the facts, circumstances, and expression by the promissor showing an intent to be bound. In this case, Margaret Burroughs, commissioner of the Park District, when asked regarding the obligation of Mr. Kelly to seek an additional permit, responded, no, you're there, you don't have to do anything else. That was an expression from a specific question regarding whether or not he was rightfully on public land. Regarding the other issue on whether or not she had the right to bind the city, that goes to the issue of corporate authority. And I would point out that the district court's position on there is dead on. 70 ILCS 1505-1701 reads in relevant part, the commissioners of such district constitute the corporate authorities thereof and have full power to manage and control all the officers and property of the district and all parks.
Commissioners, plural.
Commissioners, plural. That's correct. The only reasonable interpretation of this statute is that the legislature gave each individual commissioner the authority and the power, full power, to manage and control the officers and property of the district.
That runs against the grain of almost all municipal law.
Your Honor, it's not for the courts to rewrite the legislation, though. To the extent the statute was drafted in a manner to clearly grant authority for individuals in addition to the commission, there's a separate set of law dealing with how the commission has to act. Those laws do not say this in any way.
Well, it goes beyond that. It says no member of the board of any park district can create any debt, obligation, claim, or liability for or on account of the park district. So,
but I believe that's an acting of the commission.
That's not what it says. I think we have to read these statutes together.
Well, no, I understand that, but then you're effectively reading out the language of 1505-701. You're saying it's superfluous and or it's...
In light of what 1205-4-6 says, which is that no individual member can bind the board.
Well, to the extent it's contrary, then I think this court has to make the determination of whether or not a party should be entitled to rely upon a statute which says the individual they're dealing with has corporate authority.
Well, that's an estoppel argument. An estoppel against the government is very difficult to obtain.
Well, I would suggest in this case, where in even the cases relied upon by the city in that situation, where the city has allowed parties to maintain property on public land for multiple years, in this case 20, and 10 without a permit, that the cases actually cited by the city have found estoppel in those situations.
What about the permit? How did the previous permits, how were they approved?
The previous permits always came from the city. There was never any formal obligation started by Mr. Chapman and Kelly with respect to obtaining the approval. Those would just simply be forms that would come out from the city, which he would expect. When they didn't stop coming, he expected that he had the continued right to use these premises.
Was that is the city the commissioners, or is that somebody else?
Was the city the commissioner? Well, it was issued by the park district.
Yeah, commissioners.
Yes, the commissioners, which would include each individual commissioner as well.
Well, I assume it was approved by more than one. Is that a wrong assumption?
Your Honor, I don't know.
I was a state senator once. I couldn't do anything by myself.
I would suggest that you didn't. I would suggest you likely had the authority to hire staff. I would suggest you likely had the authority in which to take any obligations that you had for your staff and get reimbursement from the state with respect to that. And you did have the authority to effectively bind the city with respect to ultimate economic obligations the state would have to comply with. And I would suggest that this is no different than a corporation, than any corporation. That corporations are required to act at some times in board and act at some times other outside of the board is perfectly consistent with interpretation that you might want to have a park district commissioner who's appointed by the city with some authority to act in addition with their ability to act in when acting in connection with the commission. And I'll save my remainder of time to the extent I have for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McGarry?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lynette McGarry, and I represent the Chicago Park District in this matter. I'd like to make one issue clear right up front, just after the last argument. There's a lot of discussion about the city. This isn't the city. It is the Park District, which is different, and you know, my client wants to make sure that the distinction is clear. We're here today to tell you that we believe that the trial court's decision on Vera was correct as a matter of law, as a matter of fact, and a matter of just common sense. The court did find that Vera did not apply to the wildflower garden because the garden must have been copyrightable. And while there was evidence of what was the description of the garden, Mr. Kelly never testified or put in evidence of what was original elements about the garden. He discussed the garden being elliptical shaped. Well, there have been other elliptical shaped gardens out there. He chose the flowers and wildflowers. Well, there's other gardens out there that are wildflowers. We put forth that in order to be copyrightable, something about that garden had to be original, and the element or the originality was their burden to prove, and they never put that forth. There was also some other information regarding copyrightability that came out. Mr. Kelly did describe his garden as a vegetative management system. 17 U.S.C. 102, when it discusses what is copyrightable, specifically precludes anything that is a system. There was never any evidence or testimony distinguishing what part of his garden was a system and what wasn't a system.
Are these perennials? Are they annuals? I don't know that much about them.
I understand they're wildflowers that come back every year. They're native to the area.
So the plant itself that he planted 20 years ago is the same plant that's there, or does it die out? And
I believe they come back every year.
Okay.
Yeah. The court also concluded, even if it was copyrightable, somehow there was an error made on that issue, Vera would still not apply because it was site-specific.
Before we get to that, let me just confirm. You're not challenging on appeal the finding of the lower court on the status of this work as a work of visual art?
Well, we believe, I understand what you're saying, because
you're not challenging that. I think the originality
17 U.S.C. 101 describes a visual work as a picture, a sculpture, etc., and specifically excludes anything that is not copyrightable. We believe we get to the same point going where the Visual Art Right Act doesn't apply because it's not copyrightable.
You're accepting that this is a sculpture or a painting, as the district court found?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, we believe that Chapman Kelly waived any arguments to complain about the finding in the Phillips case regarding site-specific. There was motions filed in court during the trial regarding this. There was a pretrial motion that was based on Phillips that was filed. There was also the judge gave some preliminary findings basing it on Phillips and site-specific, and not once was there ever a murmur of disapproval that the court was using the Phillips case to describe site-specific work not being covered under Vera.
So that you're saying that they waived any challenge that site-specific is a requirement, or at least a possibility of saying it isn't appropriate?
Yes, I am. Absolutely. They waived it. It was never anything that was ever raised during a three-day bench trial and any post-trial briefing.
I thought there was all kinds of testimony about whether this was or wasn't site-specific and argument around that whole issue.
I'm not saying they waived any argument whether or not it was site-specific. I'm saying they waived any argument with regards to the application of Phillips.
Well, Phillips is not a precedent of this circuit, so that doesn't matter.
The lower court did rely on Phillips.
I understand that. But wasn't obliged to. I mean, there wasn't any need to say this case doesn't apply.
Okay. Phillips holds, the First Circuit held that Phillips and Vera did not apply to site-specific work. And their reasoning was, first of all, that Vera is silent on site-specific work and that it was not their job to interpret something into a statute. It was Congress's job to amend the statute.
Actually, that's an argument in your opponent's favor. If the statute is silent as to site-specific art, it doesn't exclude it. If it's art, it's included, right?
Actually, I'm can I finish my argument, and then I think you'll understand why it isn't in my opponent's favor? It is our job to interpret a statute so that the entire statute would remain intact. If we are to look at the exception of VERA, of the public presentation example of 17 U.S.C. 10C, where it says the placement and the lighting are two things that if it's destroyed, it's not covered.
Well, that's the flaw in the Phillips Court's analysis. It held, or I'm not sure if this was a factual finding based on the expert testimony in the case or if this was a legal conclusion on the interpretation of the statute. It's really hard to sort out that opinion. But the court either found or held that to move site-specific art is to destroy it, and I'm not sure that's right.
Well,
why is that right? I mean, the exception says that a modification of a work of visual art, which is the result of the public presentation, including lighting and placement, so if a different placement is engineered for the art, is an exception to liability.
Right.
So it implies that what happens when site-specific art is moved is not destruction but modification.
Well, I think you need to take into account, though, the definition of site-specific art.
Well, we don't have a definition of site-specific art because it's not statutory. All we have is a bunch of testimony from artists in the Phillips case about what site-specific art is in the artistic community, but you know, we're not bound by that.
I believe that we do have some testimony, though, in this case from the artist himself about how his art is site-specific.
But he also maintains that if it was moved, it's not a destruction, that it could be moved.
Well, he testified that he rented an airplane and a helicopter and flew around the city to choose his spot for his garden. And he chose this spot. And one of the things that was important about this spot to him was the three air vents from the parking garage along the major axis of the elliptical shape and the skyline in the back. There's a tremendous amount of testimony on that. His expert testified that it was site-specific. If we move it, even as he suggests that we can roll it up and take it someplace else, where are we going to find three air vents, or frankly six, because there were two ellipses, with that specific access that he wanted with the buildings in the background? It is site-specific. It involves the location with the art. That's part of his art.
So moving it would modify it. It wouldn't destroy it.
I think moving would destroy it. It would take what he says are major elements, the vents and the skyline, out of his artwork.
Well, I'm not sure the record supports that conclusion. And as a legal matter, what we're doing here is trying to interpret the statute to see whether this type of art is included or excluded. So, again, I'm trying to get a handle on whether this is a statutory interpretation argument or whether this is a fact-based argument about what's in the record. You know, it may be a little bit of both.
I believe it's a little bit of both. It's a question, is site-specific art covered? And if it is this site-specific art? So for purposes of argument, we can say this is site-specific art, but then we fall into the exception that we can't move it. So it's not a violation without destroying it. We didn't destroy it out of negligence.
The exception says you can move it.
Pardon me?
The exception says you can move it.
It says that it does not apply.
Says the statute doesn't apply. A modification of the work that comes about by virtue of placement is not a destruction, distortion, mutilation, or other modification as described in Section A3. So unless you know, in the course of moving it, drop it or something so that the whole thing is destroyed, you haven't violated the statute.
But we can't move it without destroying it, because then the vents are gone and the skyline's gone and everything that he chose while he flew around in his plane as part of his artwork is no longer there.
Why isn't that a modification instead of a destruction, since the statute specifically says modification?
I believe that the air vents, and there was testimony that supported this, were a vital part of his artwork.
Well, that would be because he had to work around it, I suppose. I mean, the idea of those being, I guess, artistic or symmetrical or something or other, he looked at a place, you know, Grant Park, where everybody can see it. A lot of people go by, see the sign, he did it and everything. That's a very attractive place to have an acre and a half of art. Obviously, that's more enticing than a park miles away that not very many people go to. But if you plop it, I don't know how you roll it up. You roll it up and then plop it down somewhere else. The absence of those events is not very consequential. And certainly the absence of the background, whether it's mountains or buildings, is going to be different. But wouldn't it, if it could be moved, wouldn't it be remained intact as the way he set it out? And I don't know about the perimeter, the gravel and the steel, but I'm talking about just the whatever's in the picture.
Your Honor, I don't disagree with you on that, except that the testimony at trial from Mr. Chapman, the artist, said the vents in the on the major axis across the ellipses were a part of his artwork. And unless we can find six more vents like that that would fit someplace, it would destroy his artwork as he sees it.
Well, in order to preserve the, I mean, to follow the law, and if this thing is movable, any different place is going to be different. But does that mean no matter what, no matter where you move it, it's not going to be, it's not going to retain its original integrity?
I believe so. Anywhere you move it, unless you can find something exactly the same, it would be different.
But that's the law you're telling us to establish here.
I'm sorry.
You can't move it.
You can't move site-specific
no
work
well,
without destroying it.
There's not going to be any site that's going to be identical.
You can't
so,
move.
So this kind of a sculpture, I guess we're agreeing to call it, can't be moved.
Correct, without destroying it.
No, that's too extreme a position. That reads the modification concept completely out of the exception.
I don't agree.
Do we have to conclude that to decide the case in your favor? Do we have to go that far?
Absolutely not.
Well, propose a middle ground then where you win.
We've got about
because
five more reasons why
that was the Phillips case, the extreme position. And
okay,
that was
you don't even have to get to site-specific. It's not even a discussion that has to be had. Because Vera, the statute right off the bat wouldn't apply if it wasn't copyrightable.
The threshold for originality is extremely low.
I understand that. The next option would be 17 U.S.C. 113 D1A, the building exception, where if the work is incorporated into a building.
But that garage stands quite well without the garden above it.
Well, it's actually the reason this whole thing started is because the roof's falling down in chunks in the garage and it has to be repaired. However, Chapman Kelly's position is it wasn't incorporated into the garage, where our position is because you specifically incorporated the vents that you liked so much over the garage, it is incorporated into the garage. So there is the building exception that it was. Then we get to the exception that it doesn't apply if it was pre-1991. The garden was installed in 1984. Vera didn't come into play until 91. So we're saying Vera wouldn't even apply at all because it was way before.
Well, the statute says that pre-existing works get a limited degree of protection, right?
Correct.
So the fact that this was pre-1991 doesn't take wildflower works completely out of the statute.
And then finally, in his contracts or permits that were entered into, specifically the 88 permit, which was the one that was the result of a lawsuit that Mr. Kelly filed previously, there were specifically no proprietary rights granted to Mr. Kelly in this garden. That was something he agreed to. The permit was renewed again in 89. It was renewed again in 90. And then in 92, it was renewed for the last time, so it expired in 1994. We're saying he waived any rights.
The statute doesn't require that the artist still hold title.
The statute, though, does allow him to change his rights by contract. And we're saying because he accepted a permit that gave up his proprietary rights, then
before the statute was enacted?
The 92 permit was the renewal.
The rollover.
Was a rollover.
So
okay.
if he had gotten paid for this and I don't know about maintenance and all that, but if he gave up his proprietary rights, at some point the park district would be able to destroy it.
Correct.
Doesn't matter that it's about his integrity or his reputation or anything else. He doesn't have any. By not having a proprietary right, they have exclusive control and to remove it or destroy it or change it.
I believe the 88 permit gave him the right to remove the plants. If we told him, he could come get his plants.
Which he didn't want.
But otherwise, there was no proprietary rights attached to them.
So he had that. That was the only alternative. He could remove it, which made it removable, I guess.
So the plants were his.
The plants were his. If he chose to get them, he was asked to get them many times, and he didn't want them. He did testify at trial that to take them now would be mean. We weren't really sure what that meant.
But the difference is another right of where it's dependent on the structure. You couldn't remove it because that would damage the structure, I assume, or alter the structure.
Well, he could have taken the plants.
Well,
he's arguing that
take a foot of dirt with it?
He's arguing, though, that the plants aren't just the art. His art was made up of other things. So he could take one element of his art.
Well, he could. I don't know. I can't see the movability here is hard for me. But it's, assuming he could roll it up like they do sod and then roll it back, then it's more than plants. It's the whole thing puzzles back together, I guess.
Yeah. I don't think there was ever any discussion on how exactly, if he were to remove the plants, because he never wanted them, what exactly would happen. Could he take dirt? Could he take the grass or anything with it?
Of course, your people are complaining you got weeds and other stuff.
It was. Mr. Kelly maintained the garden for certain years with volunteers, and then he did stop. And after that, it did become the park district's responsibility, and it did get quite weedy. So that was an issue. Finally, we get to the issue of damages.
If I could just clarify something about the 1988 permit, that was issued by the park district in connection with the settlement?
I believe there was a lawsuit in 1988 that he filed, and I believe part of the agreement was, we'll give you another permit.
Oh, so it was something that the park district issued to him, not something that he signed.
That's what I understand, yes.
Then there isn't a waiver, because a waiver under VERA has to be in writing and expressly done.
I believe he presented to the board of the park district, and there are minutes that are also in the appendix.
He didn't actually sign and execute a waiver. The city or the park district issued a permit, and then that was renewed every year, but that's not. I mean, it might be a waiver under some other doctrine, but it's not a waiver of the statutory rights.
Okay.
To
get to damages, there was no evidence of damages at trial regarding the contract claim. There was no evidence of what it would cost to remove them, as he had the right to remove them. There was no cost of what it would take to retrieve them. There was no cost of what it would take to remediate the land, which was a requirement of the 88 permit that kept getting renewed.
What kind of an implied contract theory was this exactly? I have a hard time figuring that out from the district court's order, and the measure of damages is different for different kinds of implied contracts.
Right.
And so in order to decide this, I mean, there's statutory issues, as you've argued, that are impediments to the contract claim here. But let's say Mr. Kelly can get over the statutory hurdles. Is this a promissory estoppel theory? Is this an implied in law contract, an implied in fact contract, some other kind of quasi-contractual theory? I don't know.
We're struggling with that, too, Your Honor. We're not far behind you. What I believe is they're trying to set forth some sort of an implied contract theory that...
There's a whole lot of those, and the measure of damages is different for each one. And often it's a reliance-based kind of a measure, which we don't really have in this context.
I'm sorry, we have or we do not?
We don't have reliance damages.
I don't know if they're, you know, they're putting forth, and quite honestly, we've, in all the post-trial briefing and everything, the damages numbers have moved from $1.5 million to $25 million to all over the place. We've never been able to really figure out what they're asking for in damages and what they're putting forth. There's the contract issue that they say Margaret Burroughs bound them over in a contract, blah, 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 which obviously we disagree with, because we don't believe that one commissioner could possibly bind the whole board, especially a commissioner at a social event that they went and tracked her down and walked in and said, hey, do we need a permit? If there's an estoppel issue, it doesn't really make much sense that there is one, because Mr. Kelly knew how to apply for permits. He had applied for permits before, and he certainly knew going to a social event and tracking down a commissioner was not the proper way to get a permit. So he knew that wasn't correct. I believe they're just upset that, you know, and they're putting the permit in there that we violated it and that we shouldn't have moved it. What is their exact contract claim? Your Honor, we've never gotten a really clear answer on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I believe my time is very limited, so I will simply say this.
1 minute.
The city, thank you. The city did not and cannot provide the middle ground which this court asked for. The truth of the matter is that VARA was drafted to protect site-specific art. This minimal exception does not preclude it from any type of protection. That's just an erroneous view of the law. With respect to the last comment made, well, they're upset we moved it. We're not upset we moved it. We would have loved the opportunity to have moved it. They came, they destroyed it where it sat for 20 years. They destroyed Mr. Kelly's work, his entire lifetime's work, in a matter of days. That is what we are complaining about. With that, I'll rest. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.